We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 3rd chapter, verses 1 through 14. I'll read verse 1. Shri Shukravacha Ata Sarva Guna Peta Kala Paramashopana Rahe Vajana Jamarksha Shantaksha Grahatarakam. Thereafter, at the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Ashwini. The sun, the moon, and other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs, full of lilies and lotuses, were extraordinarily beautiful. In the trees and green plants, full of flowers and leaves, pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to blow, pleasing the sense of touch and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the brahmanas, engaged in ritualistic ceremonies, ignited their fires, according to Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and brahmanas who had always been disturbed by demons like Kamsa and his men felt peace within the core of their hearts, and kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary system. So before we start today's class, what do you remember from yesterday's class? I wasn't here, so I don't know what happened. You have to... Yes, Madhavanpuri.
So the acharyas, they leave behind the boat?
Acharyas leave behind the boat, okay.
So, in other words, we can access to the boat by the mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And just we would ask ourselves, how come the boat is... If it has crossed already the ocean, how can it be at the same time back to the shore, original shore?
Right.
So the idea is to... If you remember the Lotus Feet of Krishna, then we can access the boat anytime.
That's right, yes. We can access the boat anytime. Anything else, yes?
Impersonalists are heavily criticized.
Impersonalists are heavily criticized.
Because even though devotees also may sometimes fall, they do not fall the same way as the impersonalists.
Mm-hmm.
They are protected by the Lord and they do not forget Him. And this so-called fall down is the cause of increasing their prema 100 times.
So he read that from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, yes. Yes, because they may say, well, why are you criticizing us so much? You know, you guys fall down too. So that's the answer, that yes, the fall down of the devotee increases his prema and he still holds tightly to the lotus feet of Krishna, whereas the impersonalist has nothing to hold on to. Except what? His own false ego, which is gone. It's lost in the Brahman, but then he has to make another one. He comes back here. Actually, it's not lost. There's still some traces there. And that's why he comes back to materialistic activities. Leela Madhuri? What was that? Oh, yeah. Yes. These were the two things I was going to read to you. Isn't that interesting? You got the main points. I mean, those are the two things that really impressed me also. Those 2 points. That, yes.
The Supreme Prabhu gave an interesting example that a king in the inner chambers, he can still, in case of emergency, he can still send his armies marching.
Uh-huh.
But if he is on the throne, he will not exhibit the intimate exchanges with his family.
Oh.
So the Madhurya aspect is more complete than the Aishwarya aspect.
Wow, so the Madhurya aspect is more complete than the Aishwarya aspect. Because when he's on the throne, he can't have his intimate, loving relationships. So yesterday, anything else? Yes. Yeah, unless we're on the platform of transcendental loving devotional service, you cannot understand the Lord. Okay? Yes. Yes, that's amazing. And this is going to cause Vasudeva great amazement in today's verses too. After when Krishna comes out, then he's amazed. There'll be four aspects of amazement of Vasudeva in verse 11. So we'll get to that. Yes, it's quite amazing. How could the Lord, from whom everything, the whole universe comes, and in whom the universe exists, the universe is in his belly, how can he come be in the womb of Devaki? That's a great wonder. Great amazing thing. And Vasudeva will explain how it's possible today in his prayers, how it is actually possible for him to be in the womb of Devaki. He will explain that. And so today we're going to discuss the prayers of Vasudeva, of course the appearance of Lord Krishna we just heard about. The first five verses, we'll discuss that. And Vasudeva's prayers, verses 13 to 22, we'll hear about them today. And we'll hear Devaki's prayers from 24 to 31. And we'll see how there is a mixture of the Aishwarya and also the Madhurya, a little bit, a tinge. As Srila Prabhupada will say, that Devaki is close to the Vrindavan platform, although she's not on the Vrindavan platform, but she's still close. Because even though she understands, and Vasudeva understands, especially Devaki, she understands he's the Lord, but still she wants to protect him. She knows that he's maintaining and protecting everyone, but still she's afraid for his life. So that Vatsalya Bhav is there, and it's very strong in Devaki, also in Vasudeva, especially in Devaki. So I read the first five verses. Now I'm going to ask you, what do you remember from those first five verses? Without looking. Yes.
The Brahmins could easily ignite the tropical fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it was undisturbed by the breeze.
By the breeze, yes. Okay, the Brahmanas could ignite their fires very peacefully, yes?
All the planets were in peaceful.
Yes, you are the astrologer amongst us, so you would think about that. And all the Rohini is good, huh? As a star. Rohini's good, Ashwini was there, and just see. And Krishna has appeared today in our Bhagavatam class. Yes? Okay, so today the moon is in Ashwini.
Krishna's birthday moon was in
Rohini.
Ashwini is mentioned here.
Yeah, Ashwini was also there, even though, you know, he wasn't, because everything is moving around him. The whole universe. Now, Krishna is coming, so it's not like, you know, we come and, you know, we change all the planets and the stars and the moon becomes full. But when Krishna comes, everything changes and they all come to see him. The moon is very happy and he becomes full, and Rohini comes. Ashwini even comes, even though he's not in Ashwini. So they're all coming there, the demigods and the stars are just coming to be there. Everybody wants to be there at the birth of Lord Krishna. So the whole universe is arranging itself for his appearance. Yes? Okay, the devotees and Brahmins are peaceful, although usually they're afraid of Kamsa. What else do you remember from these five? Yes? Although it was rainy season, it was a cloudless sky. Okay, and all the lotuses that usually blossom in day, they were all blooming at night just to greet Lord Krishna. The flowers were happy. They were all there waiting to greet Lord Krishna. So it was quite a nice arrangement for Krishna's appearance. Anything else? So the rainy season. The season was changed. What season appeared? No, spring. I think fall was also there in some way, but it was spring, the flowers of spring. The breeze was carrying the flowers of spring. Or maybe that's in the Acharyas, I don't know. Roma flowers, yes. Okay. So let's read the purport. The second to the last paragraph, about the middle. All the birds within the forest began to sing with sweet voices, and the peacocks began to dance with their consorts. And this never happens at night. The birds don't sing at night. They sleep. And the bees were also buzzing, and they were chanting. What were the bees chanting? Hare Krishna. Yes. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The bees chant Hare Krishna in Goloka, in Gokula. The wind blew very pleasantly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, and the sensation of bodily touch was very pleasing. At home, the Brahmins, who were accustomed to offer sacrifices in the fire, found their homes very pleasant for offerings. So that we heard about. And being forbidden to offer sacrifices, the Brahmins were very distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities. But just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy, because they could hear loud vibrations in the sky of transcendental sounds proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the occasion of Lord Krishna's birth, seasonal changes took place throughout the entire universe. Krishna was born during the month of September, yet it appeared like springtime. So there is spring and there is also fall. Whoever said fall is also right. The atmosphere, however, was very cool, although not chilly, and the rivers and reservoirs appeared just as they would in Sharat, the fall. So the temperature was like spring and fall, and the rivers and lakes were like fall season. Lotuses and lilies blossomed during the day, but although Krishna appeared at 12 o'clock midnight, the lilies and lotuses were in bloom. Thus the wind blowing at that time was full of fragrance. Because of Kamsa's disturbances, the ritualistic ceremonies had almost stopped. The Brahmins, the saintly persons, could not execute the Vedic rituals with peaceful minds. But now the Brahmanas were very pleased to perform their daily ritualistic ceremonies undisturbed. The business of the Asuras is to disturb the Suras. And so this is the duty of the demons. Or not the duty, but this is what they like to do, is simply disturb the Suras. The devotees and the Brahmins. Suras, devotees, and Brahmins. But at the time of Krishna's appearance, these devotees and Brahmins were undisturbed. So at the time when Srila Prabhupada was writing these purports, there were Asuras who were trying to, who their business was to disturb the devotees. They made a business. They charged $20,000 to kidnap devotees and change them and change their faith. And so this is happening even now. And of course, we are fortunate now. It is a little better than when Prabhupada was here. It's not, at least here in India, and we can get our visas. Before, we couldn't get visa. And yes, it's not so bad. And Prabhupada will mention in one of these purports today about how difficulty he had with Bombay Temple. Bombay, so much problem. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments in verse 1 is Ajana Janma. So birthless, it can also be taken as the name of the nakshatra. Ajana means Vishnu. Ajana Janma means he who is born from Vishnu, Prajapati. Prajapati's nakshatra is Rohini. So Rohini is the star for Lord Brahma, and it's also the star for Vishnu. So that's another meaning of Ajana Janma. Then the second verse is all about the different directions. It's about what was happening in the sky. That's the second verse. How the directions assumed all good qualities. The qualities of autumn season are described even though it was rainy season. Because all the elements, like earth, water, fire, air, and ether, were jubilant. Just imagine, if the earth is happy, the water is happy, the fire is happy. We never think of these things, usually. But happy fire, happy air, happy ether. Now the ether is not happy because we have so many cell phones and internet and so many things. Unhappy ether. But imagine. Anybody ever see any of these things? A happy fire or fire sacrifice? Or, yeah, you've seen it, huh? Happy fire. Very strong fire. Okay, happy fire. The joy above is indicated by the phrase, the stars shone brilliantly in the sky. The joy on earth is expressed next in the description of the town, cities, and mines. So verse 3 and 4 is the joy between earth and sky, beginning with the description of the water, prasanna salila. See, prasanna, very pleasing water. And it, for us, we don't get pleasing water usually. In the winter, it's very cold. In the summer, it's hot water. So prasanna salila was just the sense of touch. Everything was perfect. The lotus usually blooms during the day and closes at night. Now it bloomed in the night. Night assumed the qualities of the day. So what are the qualities of the day that the night assumed besides the lotus flowers? Huh? It was bright. There was light. What else? What are the qualities of the night? Yeah. Yeah, instead of falling asleep, it was invigorating. Usually night brings sleep, it brings also fear, the dark. But as you said, there was light, there were wonderful flowers blooming, there were birds singing, bees were humming, and the forest was blooming, resplendent with leaves and flowers. So verse 4, though it is monsoon season, spring's qualities are described next. The wind, which had the coolness of spring's breezes, Sukha sparsha, it was dust-free, suchi. So again, sukha, happy, happy breezes. So the breezes were happy. They were bringing the aroma of very sweet flowers, spring flowers, punyagandha. Though the fires had almost all been extinguished, they now blaze, samindata. So the fires were happy because before they couldn't burn. The sacrifices were stopped. But now the fires are also happy. And turning to the right, that's interesting. Did you ever see a fire turn to the right?
The right wing.
Right wing. The fire is turning to the right. That's the way you circumambulate, I guess. Okay, verse 5. Now it's talking about time, how the time was auspicious. Though it was Dwapara Yuga, the quality of Treta Yuga now manifested. So what is it? Now this is interesting. We can find out what it means to live in Treta Yuga. Manangsi, minds, indicate the mind, intelligence, senses, sense objects, and five gross elements all became joyful. So we know what it means to be in Kali Yuga. Because everything is a problem. Our minds, our senses, sense objects, everything is difficult in Kali Yuga. It's not happy. But here, everything became joyful. Though previously afflicted by the harassment of the demons, the devotees' minds, intellects, senses, and bodies now became joyful. The devotees rejoiced over the upcoming appearance of Vishnu, the unborn. Today is also Gita Jayanti, isn't it? And so it's actually very interesting that it is the appearance of Krishna in our Bhagavatam class. It is the appearance of Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Lord Krishna, and it's Ashwini is also here today. To grace the occasion. So in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, it says something very interesting. The whole atmosphere became as completely purified as the heart of a devotee. The devotees once again found peace and prosperity in worshipping the lotus feet of Lord Hari. Fruits filled the jubilant trees. So all of a sudden we've got fruits coming up, even though it's not the season. But the envious demons exhibited various inauspicious signs of degradation. Okay, it wasn't for everyone. For the demons, this is Ananda Vrindavan Champu, signs they had rapidly aging bodies and symptoms of imminent death. So just see. Only the devotees and the Brahmins and the innocent people were happy, and the demons were not happy. The desire vines of the celestial denizens seemed to be hanging in the air as if eager to produce fruits. At that time, all the directions felt as pure and joyful as the mind of a devotee who has received the mercy of Lord Hari. So now he compares the appearance of Krishna to many things. Just as gems, mantras, or medicines can remove a poisonous disease from the body of a man, the advent of the Lord relieved the world from contamination of material existence and the sinful effect of the demons. Happiness gradually replaced the distress in everyone's heart. You know what that means? That means what have we been hearing the last few days is that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the incarnation, which is happening right now. So if this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra spreads, then everyone will be relieved and the sinful effect of the demons will be counteracted. So that is for us to do. Now he says, the bodies of all creatures manifested extraordinary beauty and youthful vitality. Men felt extremely joyful and displayed virtuous qualities. Throughout the world, people behaved cordially and interacted amicably. Happiness twinkled in everyone's eye. At the end of Dwapara Yuga, which completely destroys faults and doubts, an auspicious, favorable, obstacle-free time appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon in Bhadra month. Just at that sweet moment, the Rohini Nakshatra, along with the good qualities of the moon and an auspicious conjunction of stars called Ayushman, appeared in the sky to give shelter to gentle persons. What does this Ayushman mean, you know? Yeah, it's some kind of yoga, Ayushman yoga.
It's one of the five characteristics of a day. It's the angle between the sun and the moon.
Angle between the sun and the moon, Ayushman. Okay. So verse 6, we'll hear about the reaction in the heavenly planets. The Kinnaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers. Vidyadharis, along with Apsaras, began to dance in jubilation. So auspicious sounds elevate the consciousness and inauspicious sounds degrade. And Burijan gave the example of the Woodstock Festival, hearing the guitars, you are moving the sun, you are moving the moon. This is the lyrics to the song, some of the songs. So this causes degradation. And in one of our japa retreats, Satchinanda Swami mentioned that the scientists, I think some Japanese scientists or Chinese scientists, found that he would play very demoniac sounds. And what was it, on water? Or
water.
On water.
He was taking pictures of the water.
And he took pictures of what the water looked like when he played sounds like I Hate You and really like rock music, heavy rock. And there were very irregular patterns and very distorted and very ugly, when the pictures of the water from that sound. And then he took the sound of Om and different beautiful sounds, and he found very beautiful patterns in the water. So we can influence everything by sound. So these auspicious sounds were vibrating at Krishna's birth. Auspicious sounds. That's why we have at the fire sacrifices, we have in the installations, we have auspicious sounds. And of course, our whole movement is based on sound, actually auspicious sounds. So, the next verse shows, actually Jiva Goswami says, the Supreme Personality Godhead's appearance in this material world only superficially resembles the birth of the conditioned souls. So that is confirmed here in this next verse, 7-8. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered. So first there were no clouds, and then the clouds, after his birth, the clouds came back and they started thundering mildly, making sounds like those of the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was of the same category as Shri Krishna. So Devaki was coming from Goloka, and she was also of the same category as Krishna. And the Devaki, she also expanded herself in the heavenly planets, as we heard from Brihadbhagavatamrita. But the original Devaki is there, and only the pure original Devaki can give birth to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original Bhagavan, Shri Krishna. So now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, according to Harivamsa, the birth took place in the eighth month of pregnancy, before the expected time in order to bewilder Kamsa. And so Bhurijan again makes a very interesting comment that when Krishna is born and when the devotees have festivals, then we have a shower of flowers. But what do they do in the material world, like in New Year's Eve, they also have a shower of something, paper. They shower, in the West, in America anyway, confetti, it's made of paper. They make little color. It's Kali Yuga, so maybe, you know, it used to be flowers, but now it's become colored paper. So this just shows the difference between Kali Yuga and other yugas. And even in parades, when they have parades, they throw this colored paper.
It's called
confetti.
Yeah, because it used to be sweetmeats.
It used to be sweets.
It used to be
candies. Wow, I didn't know that.
The procession of centuries, you know, nobody spends so many money.
Yeah, now they don't want to spend money on candy. And we still do that at Rath Yatra. We throw prasad. So we're bringing back the old customs. And so the demigods showered flowers. That's something we have never experienced. But they do say sometimes you feel like the rain. You know, I've felt it many times. If you've gone out, especially at Mangal Arati time, and there's just a very slight rain, very very, you can barely feel it. And they say that's the demigod showering flowers. Very, very, very faint rain is coming. Not rain, but it's just like very, very, yeah.
I also understand, I heard that when the sun is shining and the rain
is falling.
Bath, it's
etheric bath.
It's when the demigods are showering flowers.
Okay, when the sun is out and it's raining. Okay, that's also auspicious. Another comment by Bhurijan, on Purnima, the sun sets and the full moon rises at the same time. So, as the sun was setting, then the full moon rose and Krishna appeared. So, now there is a question, how could there be a full moon on Ashtami? Ashtami is not Purnima. So the purport answers this. So we'll read, of course, the first thing Prabhupada says, he quotes Brahma Samhita to show how Devaki is the same category as Sri Krishna. Ananda chinmayarasa patipavita vis tabi jareva nicharu pataya kalabi goloka eva nidasara kilatma bhuta Govinda Madhi Purushantamaham Majami. This verse indicates that Krishna and his entourage are of the same spiritual potency, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. We'll go to paragraph 2. At the time for the Lord's appearance, the great sages and the demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers. At the seashore, there was the sound of mild waves. And above the sea, there were clouds in the sky which began to thunder very pleasingly. So the ocean was happy, the clouds were happy, and they were all expressing their happiness by sound. And the demigods and sages were happy, everyone was happy, and they all wanted to be a part of the celebration of Krishna's birth. So even the ocean was participating, the clouds were participating, in the celebration of the appearance of Lord Krishna. When things were adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu, his residing within the heart of every living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as a supreme personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of the full moon in the sky on the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty, which is in the hierarchy of the moon. Therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night, because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty, wherein the moon is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition. So by the grace of Krishna, he could appear as a full moon. To welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the waning moon became a full moon in jubilation. So even the moon was happy, especially happy, because Krishna was in his dynasty. So he became a full moon. So these things can only happen in the appearance of the Supreme Lord Krishna. They cannot happen on the appearance of, or the birth of, anyone in this world. Now one comment that Jiva Goswami made, and you're going to hear more about it in the next verse, but he comments on it on this verse, is that his ornaments are a part of his sarup. They also appear with him. So actually, we'll hear about that in the next verse. But Jiva Goswami, after he's hearing these verses 7 and 8, he brings up an objection, another one, not that why is the moon full, but he brings up an objection. Well, how is it possible the birth and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are eternal? He is not eternally being born, neither is he eternally carrying out any specific action. His expansions appear at a certain point in time, and then after that they are no longer manifest. So how can you say the Lord's birth and activities are eternal? So what is the answer to that objection by Jiva Goswami? Yes? Yeah, that's the answer. His form is manifest in unlimited number of places. Whenever his birth or pastimes of the original form, or even he says secondary manifestation of the Lord's birth, of any original form, is completed in a certain place, it's immediately manifest again in another place. So from this it appears that not only is Krishna having his lila, and the Shingadev seems to be having his, and Vamanadeva and everybody, according to this statement of Jiva Goswami, that he says original form or secondary manifestation of the Lord's form, when it's completed in a certain place, it's immediately manifest again in another place. Well, that's interesting. So a secondary form, that is the other incarnations. The original is Krishna. Yes, so the another proof he gives is how he expanded in 16,108 forms to marry 16,108 queens. So he expands eternally. And he's in all the different universe. He's in a different universe. He's always eternally. His lila is going on. And that's why when we leave our bodies, then we will go to that universe where the lila is going on at right now, at present. And so verses 9 and 10. Vasudeva then saw the newborn child, who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes, and who bore in his four hands the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Shivatsa, and on his neck the brilliant Kostupa gem. Dressed in yellow, his body blackish like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with the valuable gem Vaituria, the child, decorated with a brilliant belt, armlets, bangles, and other ornaments, appeared very wonderful. So now this verse shows how nobody can have such a birth. Adbhuta, wonderful. So verses 9 and 10 describe the astonishing child. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, about four lines down, it is clear from the word chaturbhujam, Krishna first appeared with four hands as Lord Vishnu. No ordinary child in human society has ever been born with four hands. And when is a child born with fully grown hair? The descent of the Lord, therefore, is completely distinct from the birth of an ordinary child. The Vaidurya gem, which sometimes appears bluish, sometimes yellow, sometimes red, is available in Vaikuntha Loka. The Lord's helmet and earrings were decorated with this particular gem. So Jiva Goswami comments that these ornaments, the helmet and all these things are of the Lord, are in one sense non-different from his transcendental form. They're part of his form. When you see the form, you see Shivatsa, you see the helmet, you see the earrings, you see everything. So in one sense they're non-different. And this is explained, he quotes 6th canto, 8th chapter, verses 32 and 33, explained by Vishvarupa to Maharaj Indra in the Narayana Kavacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, living entities, material energy, spiritual energy, and entire creation are all individual substances. In the ultimate analysis, however, together they constitute the Supreme One, Personality of Godhead. Therefore, those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge see unity in diversity. For such advanced persons, the Lord's bodily decorations, His name, fame, attributes, and forms, and the weapons in His hand are manifestations of the strength of His potency. According to their elevated spiritual understanding, the omniscient Lord who manifests various forms is present everywhere. May He always protect us everywhere from all calamities. So an interesting point that His jewelry, His clothes, everything is also a part of His form. When He appears, everything comes with Him. So today, the Lord has appeared in Krishna Balaram Temple, Radhishyama Sundar, Krishna Balaram, and Gornitai. Does anybody remember their transcendental jewelry or clothes? What color?
Today.
Oh, of course, today is easy.
Today is ornamental silver.
Everything is silver.
Everything is pink, dark pink color clothes.
Yeah, it's Ekadashi, so today is an easy day to remember. It's only one color. It's like pinkish, reddish, greenish. Is there some green?
Kind of, not really green, though. It's gray-green.
Gray, okay.
White.
More like silver. Oh, yeah, swans. Swans were there decorating the dress in the background. And the crowns were, they were wearing crowns. Krishna was wearing instead of a turban. Big crown leaning, which way does that crown lead to? To Radharani? Okay. And Radharani had a crown too? Was she leaning to Krishna or? Straight. Okay. And what about Krishna Balaram and Gaur Nitai? Were they wearing crowns or turbans? Let's see how perceptive we are. Turbans? With ornaments. Okay. All right. The 6, 8, 32, 33. This is quoted by Jiva Goswami, and he, in his explanation of how the ornaments are also part of the Lord's form, that when the Lord appears, then His ornaments and everything appear with Him. So this is how He appeared, and that's how we know He's the Lord, and He's not just an ordinary person. We our birth is with blood and mucus and stool and so many, that's our decorations. Our decorations and our body are quite different. And we come out crying. And Krishna, He's going to even speak at His birth. Of course, there was one example of some baby recently that was in the newspaper that spoke at His birth in Australia. Yeah, did you hear about that? He said, "Oh no, not again." And then he stopped speaking. It was in the paper.
He didn't stop speaking?
No, he didn't. He stopped. That was it. He must have been a devotee. Yeah. He thought he was going back to Godhead, but he didn't quite make it. Anyway, yes. Usually, normally, the babies don't speak at birth. But there was one exception recently. But in the Krishna, of course, He's going to speak very intelligently to His parents. He's going to tell them their previous lives and so many things and give them orders as well as the Supreme Lord. What baby is going to give his parents orders? Only Krishna. So, of course, we will, and next Monday, we'll see the difference between how Krishna appears here and how He appears in Gokula. He appears more like a human baby. And He doesn't give orders. His mother and father. They see Him as their child only. They don't see any of the opulence of the Supreme Lord. But Krishna, he appeared in this way just to prove to Vasudeva and Devaki that yes, Vishnu has come. And you don't have to worry now anymore. Of course, that doesn't stop them from worrying mother and father, even if they have the Lord for their son, still doesn't stop them from worrying. So what to speak of us, who worry all the time about our kids. But yes, we'll see in these verses today, in these prayers, the worry, the transcendental worry, the fear of Devaki. So verse 11, when Vasudeva saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them among the Brahmins as a transcendental festival. So he had his own festival in his mind. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has listed four wonders of Vasudeva. I don't know if I gave it to you on your chart. I did. So four wonders. Number one, with my material eyes, I am seeing the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is rarely seen by liberated souls. Besides being bound by ignorance as a soul, I am also bound externally in the prison of Kamsa. So the first wonder is that here he is in prison of Kamsa and also the prison of his body. And he's seeing face to face the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Isn't that wonderful? So we also have, it's wonderful that even though we are bound, we can go and see Krishna every day. It's up to us. Number two. Now here's something we can experience. Although he is the Supreme Transcendence, the Lord has appeared from the womb of Devaki. So that's the second wonder. This Supreme Lord with his helmet, I mean, obviously, he wasn't in the womb like ordinary children. If you had a helmet in your womb and all these things, you would feel it. But he was, it's transcendental. So how he has appeared from the womb of Devaki with a helmet and earrings and all these things, this is quite amazing. Number three, when the child came out of the womb, all his limbs were nicely ornamented with weapons, cloth, belt, earrings, and crown. And nothing was out of place. Everything was perfectly clean and shining and brilliant, and not no blood and nothing like that. Number four, the Supreme Lord, whom fear itself fears, has taken me as a father out of fear. And so he's taken shelter of me. That was Vasudeva's fourth wonder. How? I'm the father of the Supreme Lord. How can I be the father of this Lord? He's everyone's afraid of him, and he's taken shelter of me out of fear. So then the purport, Prabhupada also repeats a lot of these things. He says, Śrī Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakur has analyzed the wonder of Vasudeva upon seeing his extraordinary child. Vasudeva was shivering with wonder to see a newborn child decorated so nicely with valuable garments and gems. He could immediately understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead had appeared, not as an ordinary child, but in his original, fully decorated, four-handed form. The first wonder was that the Lord was not afraid to appear within the prison house of Kamsa, where Vasudeva and Devaki were interned. Second, although the Lord, the Supreme Transcendence, is all-pervading, he had appeared from the womb of Devaki. The third point of wonder, therefore, was that a child could take birth from the womb so nicely decorated. Fourth, the Supreme Personality of God was Vasudeva's worshipable deity, yet had taken birth as his son. For all these reasons, Vasudeva was transcendentally jubilant, and he wanted to perform a festival as Kshatriyas do, to celebrate the birth of a child. But because of his imprisonment, he was unable to do it externally, and therefore he performed the festival within his mind. This was just as good. If one cannot externally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can serve the Lord within one's mind, since the activities of the mind are as good as those of the other senses. This is called the non-dual or absolute situation, Advai Gyan. People generally perform ritualistic ceremonies for the birth of a child. Why then should Vasudeva not have performed such a ceremony when the Supreme Lord appeared as his son? So he did it within his mind. So Vasudeva was completely amazed. Nanda Maharaj, on the other hand, if he saw anything wonderful about Krishna, he would never believe that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudeva believed it, but Nanda Maharaj, no matter what Krishna did, he always said, well, it must be because I worshipped Narayan in my past life, or in this life I worshipped Narayan, therefore this child is always protected by Narayan. Now, he could never conceive that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, even he was told by Gargamuni. Well, he didn't tell him he's Narayan. He said, your child will develop qualities on the level of Narayan. So then when Nanda heard that, he thought, okay, well, maybe he's empowered Shaktivesh avatar. Yeah, he's just a jiva. He's an ordinary boy, of course. Look at his behavior. He couldn't be God. But, you know, he got some empowerment by Narayan. And so here, of course, Vasudeva has a different mood. It's mixed with Aishwarya. And so then he can't really, you know, accept Krishna as his son, as Nanda will. So there's a similarity at the time of the birth of Lord Chaitanya, and this similarity is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, 13th chapter, that Advaita and Haridas were having a bath in the Ganga, and it was the occasion of the lunar eclipse. But Advaita, he distributed in charity, amazing amount of charity. And people were thinking, wow, he's really overdoing it. Just because of the lunar eclipse, he's giving in charity. Actually, it was the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so that's why he was distributing. It's compared to the charity of Vasudeva.
Which verse in
Chaitanya? Adi 13, 100. And it says he distributed charity exactly as Vasudeva did at the time of Lord Krishna's appearance. So Burijan made the point that in Kali Yuga, if you give mentally, you get the result. And so pious activity, if you do in this age, anything good you do, you will get the result. If you do it in your mind, you will get the good result. Well, try it out and see. And if you do bad things in your mind, then you won't get the result because it's Kali Yuga. That's what it says. I mean, that's what, if you read First Canto. Yes.
We read something interesting about that from the Bhakti Shastra.
Uh-huh.
Someone said that if you go to Devotion,
that's right.
That actually you do get.
Yeah. Well, I have experience in Vrindavan, you do get the reaction. Yeah. It must be special for the souls in Kali Yuga, the fallen souls in Kali Yuga. Yes, so don't, but at least do the good part. The good part you'll get. So always think of doing good for others, and it will be good for you. Verse 12. O Maharaj Parikshit, descendant of King Bharata, Vasudeva could understand that this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Having concluded this, without a doubt, he became fearless. Bowing down with folded hands and concentrating his attention, he began to offer prayers to the child who illuminated his birthplace by his natural influence. So, he was afraid. Vishnu Chakravarti said that out of parental love, he was afraid his tender child might be harmed by Kamsa's weapons, but the fear vanished when he realized the child was the Supreme Lord. Gatabhi prapavavit. But not so for Devaki. The mother's love is very, very strong. And her fear will still be there. And she can't believe that this little child is going to be able to kill Kamsa. So we'll hear about that in the next class. But now we'll start Vasudeva's prayers, verse 13. Shri Vasudeva Vacha Viditosi Bhavan Saksha Purusha Pakite Para Kevalana Anubhavananda Sarupa Sarabhutite. Vasudeva said, my Lord, you are the Supreme Person, beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge, by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he says, within Vasudeva's heart, affection for his son and knowledge of the Supreme Lord's transcendental nature both awakened. So both simultaneously. In the beginning, Vasudeva thought, such a beautiful child has been born. Now Kamsa will come and kill him. But when he understood that this was not an ordinary child, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became fearless. Regarding his son as the Supreme Lord, wonderful in everything, he began offering prayers appropriate for the Supreme Lord. Completely free from fear of Kamsa's atrocities, he accepted the child simultaneously as an object of affection and as an object of worship by prayers. So, what was the first thing Vasudeva said to his baby? You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Amazing. You are the Super Soul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge. So he got the knowledge that he was the Supreme Lord. At the same time, affection was there. And so we heard about all these incarnations, the Shingadeva, Vamanadeva, Rama, Ram, Lakshman, building up to understanding, even if the Lord comes in a human form, he's still the Supreme Lord. So now Krishna will do even more amazing things than Matsya and Rama and Buddha and all these. And he'll do it in his small childlike form. He won't have to take a ferocious form or a huge form. He'll just remain as a small child and he'll do many wonderful things. Now verse 14. My Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created in this material world by his personal external energy. After the creation of this world of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, you appear to have entered it, although in fact you have not. This reminds me of a Chatu Shloki verse here. And I think we will also hear later on the same idea. Entering and not entering. So Krishna does not descend, but he just allows us to see him. He's already here, and he's always here. But sometimes we see him, and sometimes we don't. So that's what's happening here. In the last paragraph of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, foolish persons think that when Krishna appears as the son of Vasudeva, he is limited like an ordinary child. But Vasudeva was aware that although the Lord had appeared as his son, the Lord had not entered Devaki's womb and then come out. Rather, the Lord was always there. The Supreme Lord is all-pervading, present within and without. Pravishta iha iva bhavyase. He only seemed to have entered the womb of Devaki and to have now appeared as Vasudeva's child. The expression of this knowledge by Vasudeva indicates that Vasudeva knew how these events took place. Vasudeva was certainly a devotee of the Lord in full knowledge, and we must learn from devotees like him. So we have to, what should we learn from Vasudeva? What do we have to learn from devotees like him? Yes?
The Lord hears, though never hearing, or
okay.
Never hearing, he still appears.
Although he seems to appear,
he's already there.
What else shall we learn?
Lord is in and is out.
Lord is within and without.
All pervading.
Yes?
Even though present in this world composed of three modes, he's transcendental always.
Although he's in this world of three modes, he's transcendental. What else shall we learn from Vasudeva? Okay, don't become too familiar with Krishna. Unless you're in Goloka. Yeah?
The Lord is the source of exclusive bliss.
Lord is the source of exclusive bliss. So what, if that's a fact, if Krishna is the source of exclusive bliss, then what does that mean? Therefore, we should try to be in touch with him. Okay? We should worship him. Therefore what? If we do, we'll be in bliss. What happens if we don't? We'll suffer. Yes, so if we look for the bliss elsewhere, then we will have a problem. Yes? appearance of Krishna gives fearlessness. So if anybody's afraid here, that means you're not feeling the appearance of Krishna. Something is missing in your life. What is missing in your life? It's Krishna when you have that fear. That you're seeing life without Krishna. That's of course one type of fear. We'll talk about another type of fear, spiritual fear as well. That's different. There's two kinds of spiritual fear. We'll learn about that later today. Yes?
The Lord is full of knowledge, and by seeing Him, Vasudeva also became full of knowledge of Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The Lord is full of knowledge. And by seeing Him, then He became full of knowledge. Yes, so if Krishna appears, you cannot be ignorant. And there is a verse about the holy name which expresses that concept. When the holy name appears, there must be knowledge also. A very famous verse. Yeah, yes. Vidyavadhu Jivanam. The life of all transcendental knowledge is the holy name. So if we're actually chanting the holy name offenselessly, we'll be fearless, because Krishna will appear and there will be protected from all kinds of danger, and we'll feel it and we won't worry about anything. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has a little conversation here between Krishna and his father. Krishna is saying, "Oh father, you know I have been born with limitation in your house, but do you know the truth about me?" To destroy this doubt, Vasudeva expresses his realization, and that is this verse. And the way he says it, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur paraphrases this verse. "You create this universe by your material energy and seem to enter and not enter it simultaneously. Because you are seen inside the universe, we cannot say you do not enter. Because you are seen outside the universe, we cannot say you do not enter there. You seem to have entered my house, as you are also present everywhere. You appear to have been born, but we cannot say that either, because you are always existing. Thus I know that Kamsa cannot do anything to you, who are all pervading." So this was his realization when he got the darshan of Krishna. And Burijan also had a very nice realization, which I'll repeat here from his class. And he was talking about how the devotees become fearless when Krishna appears. And this is what Burijan Prabhu says. Remember, we were talking about distress in one of our classes the other day. So Burijan says that when we are devotees in distress and we take shelter of Krishna very deeply, and if we do that, the difficulty transforms into something wonderful because of remembering Krishna. Anybody have that experience? Yes. And you're always in difficulty. Yes, so we do have that. If we take shelter of Krishna in the difficulty very deeply, then it transforms into something wonderful because of remembering Krishna. Unfortunate things turn into good fortune by remembering Krishna. And here's a really interesting point here. When a devotee is asked, "How are you?" Burijan says, the devotee replies, "Better than I deserve." Isn't that an interesting reply? "Better than I deserve." Instead of a list of complaints. "Well, I got this problem and that problem." And is this from Radhanath Maharaj? Oh, really? His standard answer, "Better than I deserve." Okay, we can learn from Burijan Prabhu and Radhanath Maharaj, "Better than I deserve." Because everything is happening by Krishna's mercy. So I'd like to just read you a little quote here on this point of how to transform distress into happiness in a spiritual way. If I can find it. Oh, it's right here. Yeah, this is quoted in Brihad Bhagavatamrita from Yoga Vishishta Ramayana. "In all circumstances, one should approach saintly persons. Even if one receives no teachings, spontaneous dialogue with them imparts valuable lessons. When one approaches persons who have real knowledge, emptiness overflows with fullness. Death becomes immortal nectar. And disasters can seem like good fortune. So this is what happens if you meet a saintly person. Emptiness overflows with fullness. Death becomes immortal nectar. And disasters can seem like good fortune. So this is, now Krishna has appeared, there can be no fear. Abhaya Charanara Vindare. And Prabhupada had that name also, Abhaya Charanara Vindare. When Prabhupada appeared, then he destroyed the fear in the hearts of the conditioned souls, because he gave the holy name, Abhaya. Okay, so we'll stop here for this class, and we'll ask for questions, yes, comments? Oh yes, if you forget Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then easy things become difficult to perform, and if you remember him, even difficult things become easy to perform. Okay? And the same with Krishna. Anything else? Any comments or questions on these verses? Yes? I didn't understand what you said. Yeah, Goloka is a big planet. It includes Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. So she's in Mathura and Dwarka. Yeah, she's eternally in Mathura and Dwarka in the huge planetary system of Goloka. Vrindavan is another place, that's Braj. Vrindavan is the biggest part, and Vrindavan is one part of that. It's described, I read actually recently one commentary that said that. It will probably come up in one of the classes, that she is eternally residing in, and it's called the Goloka planetary system, where there's in Mathura and Dwarka, she is there. Devaki. Yes?
Is this your Yodavashishta quote from Haribhakti Vilas?
I got it from, it could be. I just have Yogavashishta in mind. It could be Haribhakti Vilas, but I got it from Brihabhagavatamrita. It could be, I don't know if I put everything. 7:14 I have. I think it's part two, 7:14. It's like that particular shloka of Brihadbhagavatamrita is like about 10 pages of quotes, just like this one. Just completely quotes from here and there about the wonderful effects of association with saintly persons. And this was the most amazing one I found, so I liked it. Yes. The expansion of Vasudeva and Devaki expanded into the heavenly, to the Swargaloka. So their expansions did a lot of austerities. 10,000. Yeah, we'll hear about it in our next class. Yes. Yes. They were hoping for that.
Should be no any wonder when he appeared. So they were expecting that Krishna will appear as their son.
Yes. Still, it's amazing when you see him as your child. It's quite amazing. It's not something ordinary.
And
it's amazing.
Not exactly
frightened of Vishnu.
We'll
hear about that in the next class. She wasn't afraid of Vishnu, but she was afraid of, because she couldn't hide him anywhere, you know. You know, what's a mother going to do with a Vishnu? Four hands, and Kamsa's going to come and kill him, and she has to hide him. And so that's what she was afraid. She wasn't afraid of the four hands. She was afraid of hiding, how she could hide this four hands. And so we'll hear that in her prayers. She'll be more worried than Vasudeva. Vasudeva is convinced, but Devaki is not going to be convinced so easily. Any other questions or comments on these verses? Otherwise we can go on to the next verses for the next class, and we'll still have our break at 12, because some people have to leave at 12, so we might as well just keep going to 12.
And then, right. Every class is canceled. So, but the Mataji is there. I asked her, she sent me today no class.
Yeah.
I just went to him because...
Okay, well, he didn't tell me.
Everybody chanting guitar.
Yeah, that's very auspicious. The sound, very auspicious sound. If you feel like you missed it, you can do it after class.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you can do. Can do after class. And so we'll keep going with the prayers of Vasudev. This is verses 15 to 17. And then we will leave early today. But we'll still have our break, because we need a break. Verses 15 to 17. The Mahatattva, the total material energy, is undivided. But because of the material modes of nature, it appears to separate into earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Because of the living energy, Jiva Bhuta, these separated energies combine to make the cosmic manifestation visible. But in fact, before the creation of the cosmos, the total energy is already present. Therefore, the total material energy never actually enters the creation. Similarly, although you are perceived by our senses because of your presence, you cannot be perceived by the senses, nor experienced by the mind or words of Anmanasagochara. With our senses, we can perceive some things, but not everything. For example, we can use our eyes to see, but not to taste. Consequently, you are beyond perception by the senses. Although in touch with the modes of material nature, you are unaffected by them. You are the prime factor in everything, the all-pervading, undivided Supersoul. For you, therefore, there is no external or internal. You never entered the womb of Devaki. Rather, you existed there already. So which Chaturshloki does this remind you of?
Third one.
Anybody remember? Yata mahanti bhutani bhutesu savacheshana. Okay. So the elements enter but do not enter. So Krishna enters, but does not enter. So he entered the womb, but he did not enter because he was already there. So this is the... And what is this philosophy called? Chintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Very good. So we'll go to paragraph 2 of the purport. Supreme Personality of Godhead is not perceivable through the gross material senses. It is said, Lord Shri Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc. cannot be understood by material senses. Only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed. It's stated in Brahma Samhita. Premanjanacharita bhakti vilachanena sandasa deva vidyeshu vilokayanti. One can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda always within oneself and outside oneself, if one has developed the transcendental loving attitude toward him. Now we'll go to paragraph 4, another argument. One may argue that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates the whole cosmic manifestation simply by his glance, cannot come within the womb of Devaki, the wife of Vasudev, because he cannot fit. To eradicate this argument, Vasudev said, My dear Lord, it is not very wonderful you appeared within the womb of Devaki, for the creation was also made in that way. You were lying in the causal ocean as Mahavishnu, and by your breathing innumerable universes came into existence. Then you entered into each of the universes as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Then again you expanded yourself as Shiradakshay Vishnu and entered into the heart of all living entities, and entered even within the atom. Therefore, your entrance into the womb of Devaki is understandable in the same way. You appear to have entered, but you are simultaneously all-pervading. You can understand your entrance and non-entrance from material examples. Total material energy remains intact even after being divided into 16 elements. Material body is nothing but a combination of the 5 gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Whenever there is a material body, it appears that such elements are newly created, but actually the elements are always existing outside of the body. Similarly, although you appear as a child in the womb of Devaki, you are also existing outside. You are always in your abode, but still you can simultaneously expand yourself into millions of forms. And so everywhere is Krishna, but why can't we see him everywhere? He's everywhere. He's in the atom, he's in our heart, he's in all the elements. But why can't we see him everywhere? We don't have the eyes to see. What are those eyes? Vimanjana Shrita Bhakti Vilochanina. So we'll go on to the next verse. The next verse is very interesting because it talks about two categories of fools and rascals. One who considers his visible body, which is a product of the three modes of nature, to be independent of the soul, is unaware of the basis of existence, and therefore he is a rascal. Those who are learned have rejected his conclusion, because one can understand through full discussion that with no basis in soul, the visible body and senses would be insubstantial. Nonetheless, although his conclusion has been rejected, a foolish person considers it a reality. So what two categories of people believe this? That the body, product of the modes, is independent of the soul. Yeah, karmis. Okay, the karmis believe that, karma mamsa. And there's another category who has the opposite idea. Yes, the impersonalists, the gyanis, karmis and the gyanis. They both have a misconception about the soul. And they think that, the karmis think that the soul, that the body is there is no soul, there is only a body. And the gyanis think that the body is false and the soul is real. But what they don't understand, as we learned yesterday in one of the prayers, or the other day, in the prayers of the demigods, what don't they understand about the body?
Satya, you mean?
Yeah, it's satya.
Truth, material world is also truth.
It's based on truth, so therefore it is also truth, although it is temporary. The shape of the body may be false. The shape of the body changes. But the elements are always there. And that we learned in the last verse that Vasudeva said, the elements are eternally, I mean, they're always there. Even if it makes a body, the elements are still remaining. And as the body is nothing but a combination of the five elements. So let's hear what Prabhupada says in the last two paragraphs. Prabhupada says, not knowing the conclusions of the Vedas, some people accept material nature as substance, and others accept the spirit soul as substance. But actually, Brahman is the substance. Brahman is the cause of all causes. The ingredients and the immediate cause of this manifested material world are Brahman. And we cannot make the ingredients of this world independent of Brahman. Furthermore, since the ingredients and the immediate cause of this material manifestation are Brahman, both of them are truth, satya, there is no validity to the expression Brahma satyam jagan mitya. The world is not false. So Brahman, of course, is Krishna in our understanding. Prabhupada says, Gyanis reject this world and foolish persons accept this world as reality, and in this way they are both misguided. Although the body is not as important as a soul, we cannot say it is false. Yet the body is temporary, and only foolish materialistic persons who do not have full knowledge of the soul regard the temporary body as reality and engage in decorating this body. Both these pitfalls, rejection of the body as false and acceptance of the body as all in all, can be avoided when one is fully situated in Krishna consciousness. If we regard this world as false, we fall into the category of asuras, who say this world is unreal, with no foundation and no God in control. Asatyam apatishtam te jagad adhur anisharam. As described in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this is the conclusion of demons. So if this is the conclusion of demons, then what can we say about the Mayavadis?
They're demons.
The Prabhupada says the Mayavadis are demons. That this philosophy of the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, maybe that's what they're chanting right now. They're in the 16th chapter, Asatyam Apratishtam Te. That this is the philosophy of the Mayavads. They don't accept a God in control, no foundation, the world is unreal. And what is the effect of such a philosophy on the people in general? Yeah.
It promotes sense gratification.
Because it's better we enjoy while it's here, because it's not going to be here. And after this life, there's nothing. And the spiritual world, there's nothing, no fun in the spiritual world. Yeah.
And also establishes the philosophy of voidism. There is no anything after death.
Right.
Nothing existing.
Voidism. And that's why it increases the sense gratification. Yes, Manavendri?
Yes, but how to reconcile all this with Jesadev in 111, who says, Tristadam Risham.
Yes.
It is actually, it is almost actual. Amrisham means almost actual.
Yes.
But it's not real. Muyantiya Surya. And even the great sages are able to, by this almost actuality. So Jesadev is saying in 111 that actually.
It appears real.
It appears real.
Yes, so what is the misconception? So now we know that, okay, we don't reject, we don't accept. But what's reality then? That's the question. So Bhagavatam is to distinguish reality from illusion. So if it appears real, but it's not, well, what is the reality of this world? What is the reality? Okay, for example, the body. That's the example given here. Now, we are Vaishnavas, we are supposed to be accepting the philosophy, our philosophy. Whatever it may be, you can tell me. Prayanamvad. But in regards to, now we have the body. We're not supposed to reject, we're not supposed to accept. So what are we supposed to do with it?
Engage in
the
Okay, so what philosophy is that? What is that philosophy then? Yukta Vairagya, yes. That is our philosophy. So yukta, what does yukta mean?
Engaging,
what else does it mean?
Real renunciation.
Connecting, yes. We are connecting. So now everything appears disconnected. Now everything appears disconnected. So the Mayavadis, they want to disconnect more. That's not the solution. They want to reject it. But we say no, we don't disconnect. But we connect everything to Krishna. And then it's real. Then the body's real. Because it's acting in its proper place. In service to all the elements, we learned this in the second canto also. All the elements have a service in the universal body of the Lord. Every plant, every tree, the oceans, the rivers, the hills, they all have a service to perform for Krishna. And when the king is a Vaishnava, like Yudhisthira, then all of these perform their service. Everything is in harmony. Because everybody, all the elements, even now we could see, we get a glimpse of this at the birth of Krishna, that the rivers were also chanting, the rivers, the clouds were chanting, the bees were chanting, everybody was chanting. They were all taking part in the festival. And so when there is the head is a Vaishnava, when the head is a devotee, then there will be harmony, because everything is yukta. Everything is connected to Krishna. So what is the vairagya then? What are we giving up? If we're connecting everything?
The?
Yeah, what is that? What is the vairagya? What are we supposed to renounce? Yes. Purusha bhav. The enjoying and controlling mood. So this is the illusion. This is the illusion of the material. It appears it's for our enjoyment. It appears it's for our comfort. It appears permanent. It appears happy. It appears everything without Krishna. It appears without Krishna, it's happy. Without Krishna, it's for our enjoyment. Without Krishna, it's permanent. Without, we can do something here without Krishna. This is the illusion. And the reality is, it's connected to Krishna. Krishna is all-pervading. He's in every atom. And we have to connect it to Krishna. And that's the reality. It appears that, you know, I am the center and I am the Lord and everything moves around me, and I wake up in the morning and I think, you know, what will I do today and what will happen and all these things, but actually it's not like that. Everything is moving around Krishna. And he is the center and everything must be connected with him. Another example given for this idea is mistaking a rope for a snake. So it has a different meaning for the Mayavadis and a different meaning for us. They say that this material world, let's see if I can remember this. The Mayavadis say it's a snake. Well, I can't remember. Anyway, I know ours better than the Mayavadis. Yeah, you remember?
They say the snake does not exist.
The snake does not, okay, that's it, right. The snake does not exist. It's a rope, but we're thinking it's a snake. And we say, no, the snake also exists and the rope also exists, but we're mistaking. It's just a question of mistaking. And both of them exist. And I had an interesting discussion with this. One person was telling me about how, and I think even Bhaktisiddhanta tells a story that you know, the person is holding on to the tree and saying, let go, let go, let go of me. So you're trying to enjoy this world and you're saying, let go, Maya. And so the solution is to reject the tree and let go of the tree. But that's actually more of a Mayavadi idea, to let go of the tree, reject the tree. And what I was telling her, I said, no, you're mistaking a rope for a snake. Actually, the tree is Krishna. And you're thinking it's Maya. You're thinking it's for your enjoyment. If you think it's Maya and you embrace it, then you'll embrace the universal form of Krishna and see what happens. And if you really understand the reality, it's only Krishna, and you can't run away from it. You can't run away. The tree is, I mean, Krishna is here. He's everywhere in his universal form in the material world. And the only way you can actually get out of it is to yukta vairagya, is to engage it for Krishna. You can't reject it. Engage it in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, we have to reject our misconception. That's the vairagya. We have to reject the conception that we can enjoy in this world. Good, thank you for that. Without Krishna. Yes?
Oh, without Krishna.
You can't enjoy without Krishna.
Krishna is everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's everything, but how often do we remember that when we're having a good time? Mm-hmm. When we're in, right, devotees can. Other people think they do. Yes. 16 verse. I don't understand. Are you giving a comment or a question or? So the jivas. Yes. Yes. So the jiva makes the material world visible, therefore what? Brahman is substance, Prabhupada says. Yeah, Prabhupada says that. Well, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the second verse, there's two words, vastavam and vastu. And so there's two. There's a substance, and then there's the what comes from the substance. So Krishna is the substance, and this world is coming from him. It means, another meaning is that it's dependent on Krishna, or relative to Krishna, dependent. So this world is a truth dependent on Krishna. Krishna is the ashraya, he is the origin, he is the original substance. So this world is substance also because it's part of Krishna. In that sense, it's also substance. But if you take it separately from Krishna, then it loses that characteristic of being substance. You can't take it away from Krishna. But if you see it that way, then your vision is without substance.
So vastavam is substance or vastu?
I don't remember. Adi Purush?
Vastavam is the source of substance.
Okay, vastavam is substance.
Yes.
We're seeing Krishna with all his energies. That is substance.
Total energy without dividing.
Yes. And if you divide it, then you're in Maya. And then you're in illusion. Then the external energy works. Okay, I have something else here from 7.13.6, which also talks about the same point, about Gyanis and Karmis. And it says, the verse is, since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entity manifests himself and disappears. So Prabhupada says, Living entities in the material world, not only in present, also in the past, have been involved in trying to solve the problem of birth and death. Some stress death and point to the illusory existence of everything material, whereas others stress life, trying to preserve it perpetually and enjoy it to the best of their ability. Both of them are fools and rascals. And so those who stress death are the Gyanis, those who stress life are the Karmis.
And because sometimes we may have this tendency as a devotee, because we are fed up with so many impediments, we are let it die. And then so this is a Gyanic tendency.
Yes.
That follows the devotee. And
yes.
So who always stress death as the ultimate source of relief.
Yes, yes.
Because we are bothered by this.
The Gyanis, their main thing is fear.
Yeah.
If you read Bhagavad Gita, if you read the fourth chapter, 10th verse, being free from attachment, fear, and anger. Yeah. So the Karmi's problem is attachment. The Gyanis' problem is fear. And the atheist's problem is anger, frustration. The atheists, they're angry and frustrated and they don't want to believe any God. So the Gyanis have this fear problem. And they always are trying to escape or run away from life. They're afraid of life. They're afraid of relationship. They're afraid of all these things. They're afraid of Krishna as a person. That personal God, personal relationship. So this is the fear of the Gyanis. They're afraid of all these things. And the Karmis are attached to everything. And they want everything. And they want to enjoy everything. And then you get the atheists, who are a combination of both, but also are very bitter and angry and frustrated and just want to destroy and don't believe anything, faithless. Yes. So for the devotees, also we also remember death. But it's not that...
We don't invite death.
Yeah, we don't invite and we don't think, let me commit suicide and speed it up. Yes. The thing is this, that we don't reject life. We have to remember death. At the same time, we accept life. And like I hear sometimes devotees say, oh, maybe I should just die and I'll be with Prabhupada and then I can really do some nice service. So I tell them, well, what about... Yeah, right, you're going to go do service then. What about now? How about this life? What are you going to do now for Prabhupada? Yeah, so what... Okay, maybe next life you're going to do something. That we'll see next life. But what about now? What are you doing now?
If we don't solve our attitude problems now, they will follow us in the next
life.
Shifting the burden from one shoulder.
If we don't solve our attitude problems now, they'll follow us. And what does Nectar of Instruction say about the most important factor in spiritual advancement?
Attitude.
You just took Bhakti Shastri. So attitude is the most important factor in spiritual advancement, our attitude. Because it's everything's there in our attitude, our motive, everything is there. So this is what we have to work on. And so when we read these verses, we can see the tendencies in ourselves towards being a Gyani, towards being a Karmi. Sometimes we're attached, sometimes we're afraid of progressing or spiritual life. So this is a Gyanic tendency. It means we're seeing without Krishna. Krishna is somehow absent in our picture. The Karmis, they don't want Krishna to be there because then how can they enjoy nicely? And the Gyanis are afraid of Krishna. They will lose. The Gyanis want control, actually. Karmis want to enjoy and the Gyanis want to control. So the Gyanis are afraid of losing control. If Krishna is there and he's controlling, then, oh my God, what will happen if I lose control? No, the Gyanis, they want to be God. They want to control. They want to be the ultimate controller. And so this is... Okay, any questions and comments on these verses? Yeah.
Page 222, the very top of the page.
Okay.
Even after being divided into 16 elements.
Yeah. Well, what I understand from that is just like what Albert Einstein says, matter cannot be created or destroyed. So the total material energy is the same, whether you make it into bodies or if you use it in making houses or bodies or universes, the total remains the same. It's not like you're creating something new, even though you're changing the shape of it, but you're not making a new earth, a new water, a new fire. The elements are always the same. They can not be created or destroyed. And that's, I think, the verse says that too.
In the verse,
that it's something like that.
Something.
Yeah, I know. You can think of it in another way. That you're saying, well, how could it be intact? I mean, if you want, I mean, I understand your line of thinking that, well, if you take something away from it and use it for something, how can it remain intact? So my, but you can understand it in another way, that the total is intact. The total remains the same.
Actually,
even though it's
it's mentioned the total aggregate.
Aggregate.
It's an element in and of itself. Mm-hmm. It's part of the
Mahabhutani in Bhagavad Gita.
To the list given in the Gita. So
in Bhagavad Gita, yeah, 13.
The total aggregate remains the element in and of itself.
Hmm. Yeah, my understanding here is that the total is the total. So even if you take something from the total to make something, that's still part of the total. You can't say that it's not part of the total. It's still part of the total, even though it's been put into a different shape or something. Anyway, you can understand that. You say there's 100 million bricks, so you take 100,000 to make a house. Still there's 100 million bricks altogether. Yeah.
Just Vasudeva wants to point out here in this verse is that even if you was born like a fresh born child, we think that something new comes, but it's already in this total energy existed, so nothing new comes out. He wants to point this, I think.
Now you think so? I don't think so.
Because it's something new, we are thinking something new created, but actually it's not.
Well, Krishna is not a part of the total material energy.
No, but Vasudeva.
No, I don't. No, I don't accept that. That's, I can't. That's too far.
Understand.
You understand the reasoning? Yeah. Well, I can't. I don't see how it relates to Krishna as a newborn child.
No, he said you never entered the womb of Devaki. You was already there. You've been already there.
Yeah, but we're not like that. We're not like that. We can't say that about you, that
no,
you never entered. You were already there.
But it's a newborn child.
Doesn't follow.
Something new.
No.
I think the main connection of that verse is 2935.
Yeah. 2935, yeah.
That Krishna is saying to Brahma in 2935 that the universal elements enter within the cosmos, but at the same time
they do not enter, yeah.
And similarly, I seem to enter, but I do not enter.
Right. Yeah, that's the connection.
That's the connection.
That's the connection. I don't think we could take it any further than that. Anything else? Yeah.
Just from earlier verse, I just wanted to mention what Bhagavad Prabhupada said on the tape about the karmis and the gyanis and then the devotee's conception of reality. He says that the materialist sees the material world is reality. He said the Gyani or the Mayavadi sees it as false. But he said what they don't understand that it's the shadow of the reality. He said the devotee understands the reality. And then on this plane, this is still the shadow.
It's the shadow of reality. The Maya is the shadow. Chayeva yasya bhuvanani vibharti durga. Maya is the shadow of reality. Yeah. The Mayavadis see the shadow and reject it. And they don't understand that it's a shadow.
The materialist sees it, chases it as reality. Like
the materialist chases the shadow.
The
Mayavadi rejects the shadow or rejects the reflection.
Right, but the devotee understands it's the shadow. Mm-hmm.
And you see, the devotee sees the connection. Okay, anything else on these verses? We read up through 18. Okay, we'll stop here and we'll return at 12:25. Oh, also, I did do some research on the questions of Devamrita, and I found some answers, some good answers. I mean, the one I was thinking of for Lord Shiva was 4.24.68. And the purport Prabhupada says, even Rudra is afraid of Rudra. Question was, I can't remember, what was the question about, Lord? Where does Lord Shiva go?
Are they mortals?
And I did the research on that the Rudras are expansions of Lord Shiva, so it would not seem that they are Jivas. In fifth canto it says in a verse that they are expansions of Lord Shiva.
This thing is called that after 100 births in Varnashram you become.
Yes. Now this is, let me pick this up. No, that's explained in 11.3.12. Yeah, there's a whole purport there. And it says there's four kinds of Brahma. There's three kinds of Brahmas. Karmis, Gyanis. Brahma can be a Karmi. Brahma, and that's the Karmi. Brahma can be a Gyani or Brahma can be a devotee. And there's two, and there's four destinations because there's two types of devotees also. You can look that up, 11.3.12. Yeah, and it's in the purport, and it says, the Brahma, if he's a Karmi, he'll come back. If he's a Gyani, he'll merge in the Brahman. And if he's a devotee, he'll go back to Godhead. But if he has a separatist interest, he'll come back and he has to be Brahma again. And that's described 3.32, 12 to 15. And so that purport answers that question about Brahma. 3.32. Yeah, the question about Brahma is there. There's three kinds of Brahmas. That's Sridhar Swami, or I don't remember who. Oh, yeah? I didn't hear that one. Really?
So,
wow.
What is
wow, where's that from?
Okay.
I never heard that one. Interesting.
What's the quote from the
second?
Yeah, maybe a little one. 3.32, 12 to 15. That's in that purport also. It's quoted in that purport. So three types of Brahmas go to four different destinations. Well, three different destinations. Two types of devotees, a pure devotee and a mixed devotee. And there's a Karmi and there's a Gyani Brahma. So I thought that was quite interesting. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate about our Brahma. He's the head of our sampradaya. So yes, we accept him as a pure devotee. Pure, we accept him. We accept him as a pure devotee. In the Madhva sampradaya, they reject chapter 14 of the 10th canto, where it shows that Brahma was bewildered. They don't accept. Yeah. Yeah, so that question about Brahma seems to be there, but I don't know about your quote there. I mean, who is that? Sridhar Swami, I think, in 11th canto he's quoted. Because we heard last year, I think, that if you have 100 births perfect, then you become Brahma. Varnashram. Paka for 100 births. So that's the Karmi, and he comes back. And then there's a Gyani, and then there's a devotee, Brahma.
So he's an unqualified Brahma becomes...
That I don't know. That is, he has to find the quote. So we can't accept it until he finds it. I never heard that, but that's, could be, who knows. It's probably from Skanda Purana or Brahma Vaivarta Purana.
It was from Nidabhava.
Yes. Oh, okay. We have to... Yeah. Okay, so we have to study. Is it in the folio? Because there's two volumes, not in folio. Yeah, so more research on that point. More research.
Thank you, Mataji. I will tell him.
Yeah, you can tell him what we found so far. And for Shiva 4.24.68, that he is afraid of the other Rudras. Because all of them are in charge of destruction. So the one who was saying the prayer, he was afraid of the other Rujas, fear of Ruja. Prabhupada says, even Ruja is afraid of Ruja. Ruja person.
4.24.68,
yeah. So you can give him that purport for Lord Shiva. And then for Lord Brahma, Krishna Sarupin, he brought up another interesting verse, 10:14, I think verse 30 it was. Lord Brahma is saying, in my next birth, let me be this, 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 or this. Or he's talking about his next birth. Blade of grass, this, that, or whatever species I may be born, whether animal or human, let me be in the house of a devotees. So that's another point about Brahma, that he's afraid of, or he is saying that he may have to take another birth.
But he may be doing it out of humility.
Maybe. But usually they mean what they say when they say these prayers. When these great personalities, that, of course, it's humility, but at the same time, it's his realization.
It's a step up because he's going to be into Krishna.
Yeah. He may be praying for a birth in Goloka, which is quite different.
Because he came out in Goloka as Haridas Thakur.
Right. So he did.
So it means not every Brahma becomes engaged in Lord pastimes.
Yes, you read 11:3-12, and you will get your questions answered to that question. So we will meet at 12:30, and we'll finish the rest of the verses for today, up to, I think, 31.